look, and my problem is, you'll see my problem in a second. See, this is something you can make money selling discs. And really, while I do this, oh, I hope I don't have anything I don't want the whole world to see on. Let me just see. That's just cover my bets. I like to show people my website because the page came up. Your site has been hacked. And then some stuff I can't repeat in public. Okay, now I can go a little faster here.
Stephen?
Yes?
Just while you're doing that, to give you a couple of 2 minutes up, can I just take a straw poll while I've got a whole group of people here? Can I just ask for a hands up for anybody that uses freeware or open source software in their working lives? It's probably 2/4. And can I get a hands up from anyone that's never heard of or doesn't use freeware or open source software? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's a pretty good number. Okay, thank you. I'm doing some work on open source, and I just was really curious to see a great group of people who are obviously into computers and computer usage, just as to how many are using it. Are you okay now, Stephen?
Well, I've just deleted Java. I'm not kidding. Yeah, I know. I needed it to make it work. How did I do the free 16.1 megabytes? I can't do it.
You need a little bit of pride.
I'm really glad you told me about that, but okay.
Do you want to keep an entertainment for a bit longer? I could do a song and dance.
I'm really sorry about this, folks. I thought I had an offering. the better model for a business will be the provision of, in some cases, goods, but most frequently, services that cannot be easily copied or duplicated. Albert Ip came up just the other day, and his representation of this was that what people are selling is experiences, because an experience can't be duplicated. And you might ask, well, how does that translate to something like the music industry? Well, I suggested this. I actually said, you know, go patent this now, because you won't get the chance, and it was too late. Somebody in the States would patent it. But that probably doesn't apply here. And it certainly doesn't apply in Canada, because you can't patent stuff like this in Canada. But what one group did is they set up a company, and what the company does is creates recordings of actual concerts. So what they do is, you know, you go to the bar to see the concert or whatever, you watch the musicians playing, you have a good time, you clap, you shout along, and all of that. And then as you're walking out of the bar or the stadium or whatever, they have people at the front, at the door, selling you recordings of the concert that you just watched. And the reason why that works, although the music publishers hate it, of course, but the reason why that works is it's because it's that concert. It's the one you were right there at. This is not mass distribution, this is micro distribution. Right? That concert won't be, you know, distributed the way concerts tapes are these days, you know, to a million, 2 million, whatever people, right? That concert will be distributed to those people who are at that concert. The value of that to them is there now. What they're buying is not the recording. What they're actually buying is the medium on which the recording was made, a physical product. And in fact, that's what the recording is an inducement or an enticement to get you to buy a memory stick or a CD or whatever. But what they're paying for is that experience, the experience of going to that concert. And so it's that sort of thing that will create the new post-digital economy. The selling of things, goods, services, whatever, related to experience, the sorts of things that cannot be duplicated. I started off today by talking about being a leader and things like that, not duplicating what other people were already doing. And this is part of it. This market is to a large degree untapped. And I have a slide later on. The actual slide says the Tasmanian experience. And, you know, I'm not going to recommend economic strategies for Tasmania. That would be pretty foolish. But it seems to me that the asset that Tasmania has is the experience of Tasmania that cannot be duplicated elsewhere. Now, what that is, I don't know. I can't say, because I haven't been here very long. This is another slide from the business segment, so it's a good thing I remember these. Because we're talking about business, and looking at business models, and what's the model on information communications technology, right? Well, the model is you come up with a neat idea or product, you build up a client base, and then you sell it, right? You become acquired by Microsoft or Google. If you're really lucky, you'll launch an IPO and sell it to a whole bunch of people. It's called the stock market.
When you say this market is to a large extent untapped, are you referring to Tasmania as a market?
I'm referring to the idea of selling experiences as opposed to tangible goods or content or intellectual property. Like that bit of it hasn't been tapped, I think. Now, I think other people might disagree with me. And I'll be careful here and say, I don't have enough economic background to say how far the sale of experience has penetrated into the market as a whole. What that number is, I couldn't tell you. But it seems to me that it's untapped. It seems to me that most people still think that they're selling goods, services, content, and intellectual property. That's my perception, anyways. Where was I? I'm sorry. Pardon? Well, I'm pleased to be here today. Okay. Starting to talk about... Oh, man. Let me go to the slides. I'll remember it when I get to the slides. And I only have 15 minutes, and I really want to do my talk. Again, let me emphasize again, my talk is in your hands, so if you don't want to see the slides, just tell me. But I think that's the only way I'm going to remember this. It really bothers me that my tape isn't recording anymore. Now it just doesn't feel natural, not that I'm being recorded. Oh yeah, that's how I was going to start. The role of industry... Okay, that's a bit sardonic, but really, a lot of people talk about government-industry partnerships, and what they mean is, oh, government provides subsidies for industry, and that's the partnership. There's got to be more than that. So what's the role? What we were just talking about, rethinking business models, getting away from the idea that by receiving a government-enforced monopoly on content or intellectual property, that this transforms itself into a viable business model. Interacting with government and education, but that has a special value, which I do want to explore a little bit. Clustering and networking, that is a role for industry. And then finally, the intangible, I've classed it under loving Tasmania. I now remember my point. My point was all about the loving Tasmania thing. So we're going to skip through these lightly. I don't think I acquired the IP to use that slide, but I don't think Austin will mind. He says hopefully. The traditional model, you acquire rights, preferably for free, to some content, some IP, whatever, and then you take your monopoly position on this and then you distribute it out to the masses. And as we just discussed, that is being massively subjected to an end run. There are, and I'll let you do the calculations yourself, but there are many companies, industries in this state, I'm sure, who are making money selling things like content management systems, learning management systems, online content, learning objects, so on and so forth. And you know the industry better than I do, so you can come up with the examples yourself. For each one of those, I can come up with a bunch of free software products that already exist that are probably going to push these commercial products out of the marketplace. And it won't happen right away, but it is going to happen. Content management, try things like PostNuke, Tone, Drupal, Zoke, so on. There are more. These are all free, open source content management systems. If your business is content management, find a new business. Learning management system, Moodle is a free and open source learning management system that's getting a lot of pickup from the educational community. And there's a free and open source Java-based, if you're into that, learning management system that's coming out of the OKI project in the United States. OKI stands for Open Knowledge Initiative, and it's a whole set of protocols and functional specifications for free and open source learning management system. The capacities of free and open source learning management system are already close to the commercial models, and within the next year or two, they will surpass the commercial models in terms of capacity. If you're in the learning management system production business, find a new business. What else do you want to pick? Conferencing services. There's a product now called Skype. Skype is person-to-person IP telephony. Skype is a free product. You can make very good voice calls around the world. It costs you nothing. If you want to hook up to the existing telephone system, I think it's, I don't know, something ridiculous, like a cent a minute or less. I don't know because I don't bother. Pick a product. There is either now in development or already existing free and open source software that competes against it. Content. Educational content. There is a significant movement underway to produce and distribute free educational content. The classic example, the one I've been using at all as I've been going around talking to Australians, is that of Wikipedia. Wikipedia is based on a type of software called a wiki, also free and open source. What a wiki does is it presents a web page such that anybody can edit this web page. You might think, pretty useless, anybody can change anything. But what people have done is set up a wiki in order to be an encyclopedia. It was about a week and a half now, Wikipedia reached its 1 millionth article. The quality of the content in Wikipedia is comparable to that of Encyclopedia Britannica. The readership of Wikipedia is now greater than Encyclopedia Britannica. Encyclopedia Britannica, as both a product and a business model, are now obsolete. And Wikipedia, as they said themselves, is just getting going. What's the new model? Services. We talked yesterday a bit about brokering services. One of the brokering services that's going to be big for a little while until software replaces it is information organization and filtering, what Robin Good calls the Newsmaster. Not the best name, but it's a play on Webmaster. But things like that. I think that there is a role for brokering things like micropayments. I've designed a digital rates model that does involve a system of brokering to allow for micropayments. Again, I think that that's a temporary business opportunity. Things based on scarcity. In Strawn, it was neat to see this in Strawn. Strawn has made an entire industry based on the scarcity of Huon Pine. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Pardon?
Human.
Okay. which to me was a really neat concept, but more was in tune with the idea of how you build a new economy based on things that are hard to duplicate, hard to acquire, hard to even distribute. And then, of course, as I was talking about, experience. Don't look back. What this means is don't design an educational system and don't design an economic system based on what has already happened. It's the whole idea of trying to be leaders in a field that is already established worldwide. To become leaders, the only way to do it is to look at the new opportunities and the new business models. Open source I talked about a little bit. This is an increasing model. There are companies making a lot of money off of this model already. The Apache Foundation, MySQL, SUSE Linux, Mandrake Linux. The idea is to contribute to a free and open source infrastructure and then add value to that infrastructure by providing support, services, installation management, and so on. The things that you can't duplicate but have to get new each time. You know, every time Windows crashes, you have to bring in the tech person again. You do it less often with Linux, but still. For service and things like that, that's the human touch kind of thing. Earnings are derived not from the product itself, but from products related to support and services. And the key in open source is that you are building not dependence in the customer, not what they call lock-in, but rather you are building the capacity of the customer. The idea here is, as the customer makes more money, they are much more able to purchase your own products and services. Interaction. By interaction, I'm talking about business-government interaction in our field, particularly the educational technology industry interaction with government. And the different ways you can interact. As I talked about earlier, the model, at least in Canada, that seems to happen a lot, is a relation of dependency. See this, even in New Brunswick, I see this. A company starts up with government funding, it runs for a while, and then after that funding runs out, it tries to get a new round of government funding. If that new round of government funding is not forthcoming, the company falls. This is not sustainable. So the relation between industry and government needs to be thought of in a different perspective, where the government is thought of as a partner with the industry, and I'll expand on that in the next slide, rather than a funder. The government doesn't give things to the industry, rather the government works with the industry as an equal player. So we've talked about training for industry's needs, so I'll just skip that part. Oh, we can come back to it. The idea here is that the relationship between government and education in industry is that the role of government is to increase capacity capacity in the population as a whole. Meanwhile, similarly, the role of industry is to create capacity in its customers. If there is training being done with respect to industry, it should be at the customer level rather than at the employment or production level. Industries that support, enhance, and increase the capacities of their customers are more likely to be successful. That is, after all, what we call it productivity software. So, I've got a couple of links. These slides, by the way, will be available on my website later. The idea of the cluster model, and the cluster model is not my invention, it's not even close to my invention. It's widely adopted. Toyota, the company, is in fact a network of more than 100 separate companies, each working autonomously in collaboration in order to produce a car. In New Brunswick, believe it or not, there's a potato network cluster, and they support themselves online through interaction and communication with each other online. I said online twice, never mind. In Silicon Valley, there's a thing called e-learning forum, and if you are involved in industry in this sector here in Tasmania, go to this website. In fact, you can skip the rest of my talk. But go to this website. As soon as you get home, go to this website and look at how industry shares with itself in Silicon Valley. That's the classic example of a cluster. It doesn't work without the sharing, and they do it as well as, if not better, than anyone else in the world. In Canada, in New Brunswick anyways, we have things called cyber socials. Not quite the same thing, but it's still kind of the same idea. And as I say, clustering isn't my idea. Clustering is an idea that's been around for a while, is well researched and well described. That's not where I wanted to go. Here we go. The principle of clusters, the principle of networks, on the one hand, communication, but more crucially, autonomy at the local level. You don't direct a cluster. Each company does its own thing, makes its own decisions, comes up with its own priorities. These companies in a cluster may actually compete with each other. Nonetheless, even companies that compete get together, they share capacity, they share expertise. The idea of a cluster or of a network like this is one of voluntary collaboration. We come back to what I was talking about, employee-employer relationships. It's the same kind of principle that operates in a cluster, right? The mutual exchange of value. People or organizations working together as partners, and forming consortia that arise and fall in order to meet the needs of the marketplace. The principle, and it's a little hackney that I want to say anyway, is the whole is greater than the parts. And the idea is that although these companies operate autonomously, if the level of sharing and communication is great enough, when and if needed, they can act as a single entity for the purpose of, say, obtaining a contract, producing an export, creating some sort of value. if you are in the ICT industry, and to the extent that clustering isn't done now, then I strongly urge that you look into this model and follow it. Again, well, I'm probably not telling you something new. The new part is this. This is the last slide. Because I asked, why would anyone stay here? Not in the sense that it's a bad place, but in the sense that business inherently has no attachment to a place. A business is a bit psychopathic in that way. It's completely self-interested and only wants to make money. And that's fine. That's what business does. But it means that if and when the opportunity arises, it's normal and natural for a business to pick up stakes and go somewhere else. So I asked, why wouldn't they do that once they're successful? Why wouldn't they just leave Tasmania? And the answer came back to me, well, because they love Tasmania. Well, you know, I haven't been here very long. I can understand why they would say that they love Tasmania, but at the same time, it's the sort of intangible that I can't address personally. What is the thing that would keep a business here, even when it becomes successful? Is it the nature? Is it the people? Is it multiculturalism? Is it an open and tolerant society? That's something that you have to define for yourselves. I think that looking at the government pages, to some extent, you have already gone through the process of defining it. But I think you need to be clear about what it is that is the Tasmanian experience that makes a business uniquely Tasmanian rather than just as another global corporation striding the continents. So I think we'll stop there because I'm getting strong hints that we should stop there. And I will pick this up after lunch and I'll try to solve my recording problem.
Thanks, Tim. It is lunchtime, and I'm sure there'll be lots of questions and maybe something will come up over lunch and we'll negotiate how the rest of the day is going to run. Seems to be the questions in the first are working better than the other.
Yeah.